Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
For the very last time, it's Justin and Ailish on the Fan Morning Show. Let's have the best for last today. Let's have our favorite, most fun, most interactive, best Friday, best morning show today, listeners. Let's do it.
Well, we've already got step one down for that because we do have our best guest list, I think, ever.
Personally like just requested. Our faves.
Personal requests, all our faves and all the sports that matter. It could not be lined up better for a final show.
We're going to have an absolute blast. And we're going to round up our show at the end of the show with a fun little segment where we're going to do our preseason predictions that you can't hold us accountable for because we ain't on the morning
we
anymore.
We gone. So, not at least in this time slot, you can't,
when we hot
can't come back
that,
on us.
The Leafs are going to win the cup or whatever. You can't find us to this timeline, so
no.
See us another
slot. You
have
to find us elsewhere, and we'll just like you know we won't listen because it does not apply.
Oh yes, so today it is our final show, Justin and I on the Fan Morning Show, as we have mentioned the last couple of days. But if you've missed it, Brent Gunning and Ben Ennis will be taking over our slot at 6 a.m. on Monday morning. We had them at the end of the show yesterday wrap it up, and they are high energy. They are ready to rumble. Two guys with a lot of experience, a lot of expertise, and a lot of fun. Gunner's definitely built for the morning. That guy is like eat, sleep, breathe morning.
Yeah, he just like he's more passionate about like he's very passionate about the Toronto Maple Leafs and all things sports. Mm-hmm. But he might be most passionate in life about just mornings in general.
I think he'll be okay. And Ennis yesterday revealed that he's going to try to get up around 4, maybe get a 10-minute bike. And like, listen to this clown. He thinks it's easy. He's like, I'm going to get a 10-minute stationary bike in, a 2-minute ice-cold shower, and then I'm going to drive in. I'm like, that'll last 3 days. If that.
You passed concussion protocol, by the way. You were your head was spinning.
It was loud
during that little round table. Yeah, Josh is going to have to make some adjustments back there because they're a little louder than us. So get used to that.
They're awesome. So you guys will be in good hands, everybody, on Monday morning. And as we mentioned, we're not going very far. We will be taking over Leafs pregame and intermissions moving forward. So all the Leafs games that we have on the station, you can catch us teeing it up and breaking it down during intermission. So Justin and I will actually start that on Monday. So we don't get to go too far because mm-hmm. Monday, first preseason game that we have, that will be real fun for us, a really fun new challenge, and looking forward to that. So 7 p.m. Sens and Leafs on Monday, we'll be doing the pregame and intermissions for that. And also, our new full-time job, our new full-time time slot will be 6 p.m. moving forward, but we won't start that for about 2 weeks just because Blue Jays and scheduling is we're getting a little, we're pushing it a little bit. So October 10th, we believe, will be our first show on what is a new show called The Fan Pregame.
Mm-hmm.
6 p.m. weeknights, and you can catch that on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, of course, but also on Sportsnet 360. And so you can see what we look like on the television screen. That will be a jump scare.
Yeah, I'm gonna need 2 weeks just to try and, you know, get back into reasonable shape.
Yeah, we got to slim down here.
Vacation came at the wrong time.
My mom's always like, TV adds 10 pounds. I'm like, Mom, that is, you don't say that to people, but it stuck with me.
It may happen.
So we'll be there in a couple of weeks. You can catch us at 6 p.m., The Fan pregame. We're really fired up for that because it is also a new endeavor for us and the station. We're taking you through the top stories of the day, but getting you excited for what's to come. And I think that we're pretty good at getting people excited for stuff. I think we're passionate and get this fan base going for whatever's ahead.
Yeah, and let's be honest. We got the best collection of live sports on Sportsnet, and our show is going to help you get ready for that. So, you know, you guys love, everyone loves tuning in to what we have 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. and on, because that's why we do sports, to watch sports. So hopefully we can put everyone in the best position to be informed mm-hmm. and hyped up for the night ahead. That's what we plan to do at the Fan pregame.
You can put us on while you're cooking up dinner. You're pre-gaming for whatever is come. We're excited to do that endeavor with you. So you can send in some messages for us today at 590-590. I'm hoping that in the A-list we can read some of them. Doesn't have to be about us. If you've ever wanted something read on the radio to a loved one, you have a take, you want to get something off your chest.
Oh, you're sharing the platform.
The A-list is for you today,
okay.
Listeners.
I like that.
So if you want to say something, you want to share something, you got a fun little tidbit, you're excited for the weekend, the A-list is your time today. I want to share that with the listeners. It's been a joy of mine to have that segment. Not sure if it's going to continue on. I'm assuming it won't because this is our thing, and it got two new faces, and if anything, it would be the B-list with Brent and Ben.
Yeah, it would be.
But it just sounds like it was, you know, downgraded a bit, B,
yeah.
So they might just
I don't know if they'll
thing.
Accept that immediate downgrade.
No. Yeah. So let's have a great last A-list. We'll have a great last yum, yum, yum. So much fun to come this morning on the Fan Morning Show as we say goodbye. So we got Charles Davis, of course. We could not.
Probably could have guessed that one.
If Charles Davis was unavailable today,
if it was like mid-April,
we would have had Charles Davis anyway.
Yeah.
But if he wasn't unavailable today, he's also calling us from Seattle, folks. 7 a.m. here, 4 a.m. there, and he does it for the love of the game.
He doesn't
and
even
the love
hesitate.
Of us.
Does no. not hesitate. Does not blink. He will get up at any time because that's the kind of guy he is,
he's
and
perfect.
That's why he's one of our favorites, if not our favorite.
7 a.m. Charles Davis, 7:30 Kipper, who we're going to see a lot of moving forward because Kipper and Bourne have moved to the 4 to 6 time slot right before us. We'll be sharing a room. We'll be seeing them up close and personal. Don't get intimidated, Justin. Kipper's a nice guy.
Yeah, I've never interacted in person
You've
with Kipper.
You've never seen Kipper in person?
So that might throw
he
me
will
off.
Tower over you.
Well, everyone does.
And he'll wear that Stanley Cup ring and go to shake your hand and it'll crush you.
He doesn't
you.
Wear a Stanley Cup
I've
ring,
I've seen
he?
It before.
Really?
The first time I ever met Kipper was at a photo shoot here at Sportsnet.
He was wearing a cup ring.
And I shook his, hand and I was like, oh my God. It's like star struck a little bit. So we'll have Kipper and Bourne from 4 to 6 moving forward. And the 5 o'clock hour is a national hour, so across all of our stations. And they'll also be on Sportsnet 360.
And that's another really cool thing about what we're doing next is, yeah, we overlap with shows here. JD comes bombing into this room after we're finished every day. But it'll be a little different because guys like Kipper or Bourne may hang around for us. Sam McKee might hang around for us so we can continue the Leafs discussion and even extend what is Kipper mm-hmm. and Bourne, which is awesome. An awesome show.
High energy, fun
is.
Vibes.
And maybe we're going to get more opportunities to chat with those guys in person. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So Kipper at 7:30. Some stuff to go through Leafs day one of training camp. We can rip through that with Kipper. And then to wrap up our guests for today will be Jeff Blair. And Jeff Blair has been a guy that I was definitely scared of when I started
still
the station.
A little scared of.
No. Jeff Blair and I could be secret besties. Like he's got a soft spot.
You two are clicking at a high
and
level. I'll give you that.
I seen through the facade of Jeff Blair. And I know he's got a big heart. Like when the Grinch grows four sizes, that's Jeff Blair. So we want to have him at the end of our show to wrap up
what do you think makes his heart grow?
What? Not last night's baseball game.
No.
But
not at all.
I think he's a really sweet guy, and he puts on a tough exterior. We broke through it. So Jeff Blair at 8, and then we'll do a fun little wrap-up of our show at 8:30. So stay tuned for all of that. Last night, it's too bad we have to come on here and talk about a loss for our last show in the Blue Jays, but just the way the season's gone, it's all good. Gerrit Cole is damn good at baseball.
Yeah, like, he's a problem.
We knew that going into yesterday's game. We knew that he's got the AL Cy Young locked up. They should have just awarded it to him after his performance last night.
That's the way to sew up an award right there.
I mean, it's not even close. It's not even up for debate. The guy throws 8 innings, 9 Ks, and absolutely gives the Blue Jays nothing. And the Blue Jays also produce nothing on a great pitcher. And I guess the biggest point of concern, and it's one game, they lost the game, we know that, they made it tight at the end, they like to do that, they're like fake Raptors comeback, but you will only be facing the best of the best when the playoffs come around. You're not going to get lower end starting pitching, lower end bullpens. You're going to be facing the tier right below Gerrit Cole every time you go out there down the stretch. You're going to face Gerrit Cole again. You're going to face that Michael King superstar who came out of nowhere. Again, you're going to face some really good pitching.
Is
this
he a superstar against the Jays
he
only
might be.
Or just a well, superstar?
You're going to see him again.
Yeah.
You're going to see some really good pitching this weekend with the Rays. Like, you need to be able to capitalize against any type of pitching. And the fact that the Blue Jays have struggled against the best makes sense. but it's not a trend that you want to have, A, in the back of your mind when you're going up against these guys thinking like, oh, we've got nothing on Gerrit Cole all season long. He's really tough to play against. He's really tough to hit against. Oh, we're playing the next best level of starting pitching this weekend, and we can't create anything. So last night, seeing another time where Gerrit Cole just does his thing without blemish was a little shaky for the Blue Jays fans.
Yeah, problematic, right? Because you're right. That's what you're going to see in the playoffs. You're not going to see it to that extent because Gerrit Cole has been the best in the American League. You just mentioned it. He's going to win a Cy Young. So it's not like you're going to be seeing a million Gerrit Coles throughout the balance of a postseason run, but you're going to be seeing something and almost exclusively something on the path towards that, right? Mm-hmm. And there are degrees of competitiveness. Like you have a little bit of an excuse if you don't get five or six runs through seven innings on a guy like Gerrit Cole. Like, yeah, he doesn't give that up. So it's not like you're this outlier and you're this huge problem, but there are levels of competitiveness and just making someone work, making a good pitcher work to even the slightest degree shows that, hey, maybe there's some competence to this lineup. Maybe there is some potential for this lineup. Maybe against lesser competition, they'd be able to tee off, and they just didn't even show any of that. It was zero fight from the Blue Jays offensively. Not a ball hit into the outfield until the fifth inning. Not a hit until the sixth inning. I mean, once Gerrit Cole started to fade a little bit, they finally got some base runners late when Gerrit Cole was trying to get to 200 innings on the nose because he could go eight strong against the Blue Jays. It's not going to be Gerrit Cole every night. It's going to be Gerrit Cole at least once more this season, which is going to be meaningful because it looks like he's unbeatable, at least if you're a Toronto Blue Jays team.
You know who it's going to be tonight, though?
It's going to be Tyler Glasnow tonight. And
that is not a huge step down.
And not only is it not a step down, it is exactly what you're going to see in all likelihood to start the postseason. Like, I mean, if we've been doing percentages for the last month, 6 weeks, the percentage that the Blue Jays make the playoffs and see Tyler Glasnow in the first game is a pretty high one, I would say. So maybe this game, today's game, tells us more, and they're on a travel day and they're playing a little early and it's not the ideal scenario nonetheless. But this is what elite pitching looks like. Gerrit Cole, Tyler Glasnow, Zach Eflin, whoever it's going to be for these teams that are going to play in the playoffs. And against elite pitching, the Blue Jays look like what their lineup looks like, which is one that doesn't necessarily look like it's going to do any damage against good pitching or against playoff teams.
So if it's the Rays, as you mentioned, it's Glasnow, Little, Eflin, Savale, Bradley. If it's the Twins, it's Pablo Lopez, Sonny Gray, Joe Ryan, and I forget their last two. Either way, there's three studs for you right there. So
let's start with two, yeah.
So it's not easy for anyone. Specifically those two teams who you probably will end up playing if you do make this wild card, this playoff push. So finding a way to hit good pitchers, I mean, it is the hardest thing, but that lineup didn't look threatening at all. But I want to ask Jeff Blair about this because we're looking at, okay, the Rays, the Twins, like they've got good pitching staff, but are those teams not feeling the same way about the Blue Jays? Like, are they thinking, well, we're going to have to find a way to out-hit them? If these are going to be like 1-1, 1-2, 2-1, 3-2 games, you're looking for that big moment, right? And it kind of came at the end of the game last night. Vladdy gets put in for pinch run or pinch hit because of his injury. So our update on that was that he had that MRI yesterday. We didn't get information until after our show, but no structural damage, some inflammation. And he didn't participate in the game all the way until the very end when he pitch hits and runs very gingerly to first base. So we know that he's dealing with something. And that's not great considering you're going to need any of the big guys to get one timely hit if you're playing pitchers that aren't giving you much.
Yeah, I'm a little conflicted on the Vladdy thing because like, obviously, I mean, I'm not going to make any more predictions saying that he's going to play and he's missed two games. Finishing strong, Justin. But if he can hit once, why can't he DH? And if he's going to spend most of the day in the cage getting ready for that one at-bat, why can't he DH? Like, those would be live at-bats, and maybe it's Gerrit Cole, and you'd rather him not swinging out of his shoes, not that he would really be in that position, or Gerrit Cole would put himself in that position. But, like, if he could take one at-bat, I would have liked to seen four in a big game against a good pitcher, and maybe we'd be talking about this game being a little bit different, even though Jose Berríos kind of prevented that from happening by being or making those mistakes early. But I'm thinking when that all happens, like, we're going to see the worst case scenario here. We know what's going to happen here. And that's not like a slight at Vladdy. I mean, I guess it is a little bit. And it wasn't a double play, so it wasn't quite the worst case scenario. But it's what were the percentages, if we're doing percentages, that Vladdy would hit a ground ball and have to sprint out of the box to try and keep the game alive?
Like, after pretty high, right?
So, if it's a lazy fly ball and he gets to do the jog thing, it's probably not a big deal. But if you held him out because he was too hurt or too much discomfort mm-hmm. to play, you put him in a position where he did what he's going to have to do anyway to be a DH, plus he had to run and do a full-out sprint when he's been trying to nurse and get a knee back to health. So it just, to me, like, you have to do it. These are important games. Like, you could miss out on the playoffs by one game, so if you didn't bring him in, you might have been like, hey, well, that's one of the reasons why we didn't make the playoffs in the end. And that wouldn't look so good. But if he could play, I mean, if he could hit, I feel like he could DH. And I would have liked to see him yesterday. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't know exactly what the conversations were. I don't know how the knee feels. And I don't know what the knee, you know, looks like or potential damages for continuing on. Like, you just don't know. It's all speculation. But he hit once. Why couldn't he hit four times? And if you didn't want to hit him four times, did you really need that sprint at the end of the game?
Let's play John Schneider's post-game clip about this very topic, Justin. Great segue.
He was feeling good throughout the day and, you know, hit throughout the game. Everything checked out good. So, you know, we were just kind of waiting for a spot for him to be the tying run, really, no matter where we were in the order, pretty much. So it's, you know, Holmes is tough, you know, sinking fastball coming in at you, but he felt good. So that's a positive sign.
Is it a positive sign that he could be in the lineup tomorrow? Or are you?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, you got to see how he checks out, you know, tomorrow and everything. Be careful with him, but he reported feeling good, you know, move well down the line, and we'll see how he is tomorrow.
Maybe he just needed a day.
2 days. Maybe the decision was made. Hey, this is a 48th hour thing that we just mm-hmm. want to, you know, we just want to give it that time. Maybe.
You already looked at Garrett Cole and said, well, we're going to lose this one anyway.
I don't know about the strategy. Exactly. I don't know about the strategy. It was like, yeah, we'll just, we'll rope it up. We'll hang around here. And if there's ever a possibility where we're in a position to tie, that's when
then you're coming
him.
In.
I mean, that's a bit of a defeatist strategy right? And I understand that they've already won the series, that they won five in a row, that it's Garrett Cole. And that there is bigger fish to fry down the stretch here. I don't know. I don't know if that sits well in a playoff race for me.
I don't think it also helped that Jose Berríos had a real tough start to the game, put the Yankees in a position of comfort, put Garrett Cole in a position.
You could have turned it off right there.
Yeah, and some people might have. Garrett Cole definitely was pitching from a position of, well, we're ahead. I can just do my thing here, and I have no concern whatsoever that this is going to be tight till the end, where the Blue Jays got the tying run on at the plate. But nonetheless, not a great start for Jose Berríos, but he did dial it in for the rest of the outing. But, you know, if you end up with a 3-1 shot, and was it the first inning?
Yeah.
Not the most inspiring way to start a game, and it puts the other team in a position of a little bit of ease. They already have it kind of in the bag. They just got to hold on tight, and the Blue Jays don't offer enough threats right now, the way their lineup is constructed, to feel like they're going to make a huge comeback. And they tried and they failed in the end.
Yeah, I mean, opposing pitchers got to feel pretty confident going against the Blue Jays. I mean, maybe I'm understating that a little bit. But if you look, if the lineup is just one guy of serious consequence, that being Bo Bichette right now, in a world where Vladdy Guerrero Jr., it's like it's easy to pitch against because you just have to be careful with the one guy. Mm-hmm. It's what Kevin Gausman was saying when we were in conversation with Blake. It's like, yeah, we have to be careful or work around Judge, be careful with Gleyber Torres. And after that, I can just go out there and throw whatever I want. And I think pitchers probably feel awesome about preparing
like
for the Toronto Blue Jays because there are books out now on David Schneider, who's mired in an 0-for-30, something around those lines. Spencer Horwitz, I guess there's enough. I mean, you just look at Kevin Biggio hitting third. Like, you're feeling pretty good as you prepare for that because the book is out on what is a clearly lesser lineup. And for a guy like Garrett Cole, I mean, licking his chops before that. Like, let's sew this baby up. I'm going 8 innings, no questions asked. Give me that Cy Young. Why wait until November when you're going to actually hand it out? Like, it just feels like they brought something lesser than to the table, and you got the exact result, especially after Berríos wobbles early, that you should expect. The Garrett Cole factor, though, as strong as it looked against the Blue Jays lineup, I mean, it's night and day for the Yankees, too. Like, immediately when he leaves the game, it is complete calamity. And they almost got back into that game.
It's laughable,
because the
difference.
Yankees were just, it was a clown car once their only elite player, aside from Aaron Judge, exited the game. Like, I don't know what
it was
happening.
Like,
I thought they were
going to
come back and win that
there.
Game.
And I wouldn't have been surprised if they did, because it was like playing the literally the number one pitcher in baseball, basically, at least in the AL.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that that team kind of feels safe behind him, right? The second he was off the mound, it was like, oh, let's feast on this single-A baseball team.
Yeah.
Like, that was the caliber of pitching that they were going up against. And credit to the Blue Jays for kind of finding a way at the you know, the end of the game to make a little noise and to ruin our underbet, classic. But, you know, that's not going to be, as I said, the quality of teams
no,
that you're facing.
There won't be clown. There won't be clown cars in the postseason.
And again,
Gerrit Cole is one level, right? Mm-hmm. It's the highest level right now in the American League. I don't know where Tyler Glasnow is right behind that. But tonight is going to be a good barometer.
Yes.
And I expect Vladdy, I mean, John Schneider said it, to be back in. So
you guarantee it?
Oh, God, I shouldn't have said that.
You expect.
Anyway.
We'll give you expect.
Going with expect. Expect him to be back in, which means it's going to look closer to what it needs to look like. Mm-hmm. At least the best they can do. But still, this is a higher bar. And at the very least, make him work. Make it difficult. Yeah. Make it not so that he's not breaking a sweat and breezing through. Glasnow is not Gerrit Cole, but Glasnow is the quality of pitcher that they're going to see. And if it's the same thing, non-competitive at bats, breezing into the fifth inning with little trouble and not having to actually work or deal with a runner on base, like, we're going to learn even more about this Blue Jays lineup that we already know so well.
Good test for what could be a postseason head-to-head here. So, Rays tonight, Blue Jays, they're on the road at the Trop. Love that place. 6:40 first pitch, so a little bit earlier. I don't know why they do that there, but they do it, so whatever.
They like to be different.
They like to be different. So cool and trendy. It's edgy, really.
Those edgy Tampa Bay
Rays. So edgy. Anything else from yesterday's game other than Nate Pearson and George Springer?
Well, I don't think we're going to see Nate Pearson in terribly high leverage spots. But yeah, George Springer saved his ERA from looking.
Oh, did he ever.
Far worse. At least two plays to save runs. So yeah, if I'm Nate Pearson, I know it's a flight to Tampa. They're probably checking into a hotel as we speak. Tough on Yusei Kikuchi, by the way.
Why wouldn't they have gone last night? What the hell have they been doing all night?
Well, I think Dan Shulman said they're probably get in at 4 in the morning. I don't know. It takes a little while.
From New York
okay,
to
they're
Tampa?
Probably they're probably asleep.
What, did
by
they
now.
Fly to Europe first?
I was exaggerating. Just a
quick layoff.
Stuck on the tarmac, all right?
Quick layover in Iceland.
You know how airports look work nowadays?
I think that they probably have a private plane.
They're fine. They're home and cool in a Tampa Bay
they
hotel
be sleeping
as we speak.
Because Kikuchi
needs
his rest.
But they're only starting their sleep because Kikuchi needs his rest. It's problematic. I forgot my point now.
Nate Pearson needs to get
Nate Pearson,
by Springer
like,
some beers.
I know it's a private plane, as you mentioned.
He needs
to
go over and say thank you.
Can he reach in and grab another thing of Pringles for George Springer?
I think he
that would be appropriate.
Maybe uncrustable.
Given what the right fielder
give
did.
Give him a couple uncrustables.
Yeah, that's
and we're all
work.
Set. All right, well, Blue Jays back in action tonight. You know, they ended a 5-game winning streak, and they hadn't had many of those this season, so it was good to see them picking up a little momentum. Reset tonight against a better baseball team from top to bottom, a team that you might see when it really matters here. You're going to see them twice, and these games could end up meaning something. Obviously, the Rays are playing for something as well, so it will be hopefully better baseball. Mariners and Rangers did not play last night, so with the Blue Jays' loss, Texas and Seattle have moved within half a game of Toronto for the American League second wildcard spot.
Those teams just moving in lockstep, eh?
They're tied at the hip.
And they play each other a billion times down the stretch, so they're just going to remain that
like
way.
If you want to watch baseball this weekend, Mariners and Rangers open the 3-game series tonight, face each other 7 times over the final 10 regular season games. So,
what do you want to happen there? It probably doesn't really apply at all to the Blue Jays.
Oof, I need to see a chart and a graph and a map and a Excel spreadsheet before I answer that question. I just want one team to kick the crap out of another. That's it. Beat them down to a pulp where they don't want to play baseball anymore.
I guess that's the clearest path.
Mm-hmm.
Give us Seattle. Give us Teo. What? You don't like Teo?
I had
you wouldn't root for him in a In a non-Blue Jays scenario?
I just had a little bit of PTSD from last year, that's all.
Okay. That's true. I mean, I guess cheering for the Mariners is tough.
Whatever. Quick. Let's not belabor the point on Alec Manoah updates, but Ben Nicholson-Smith yesterday, he has got the inside line to something in the Alec Manoah camp, or he's got like a... He's like
it's a value, wiretap. That's a valuable piece of information.
He's the guy giving us
information
everything.
Information stream, yeah.
So per BNS yesterday, Alec Manoah recently received multiple injections to his right pitching arm. The shots were intended to reduce inflammation and discomfort. His season is now officially over. We knew that, but officially over. I don't know much about shots in the arm. Blue Jays need one. But Alec Manoah is... Dunzo for this season, and whatever is going on behind the scenes seems like I think we can easily allude to probably a little bit of tension because the player is saying one thing, the team is looking for one thing. He's dealing with something. I think this offseason will be so interesting to figure out what happened and what will happen with Alec Manoah. And I know Blair touched on this a little bit, Blair Barker, yesterday when the news came out, so we can quickly go over it with him as well. But I just hope that they figure it out. And move on.
Well, what happens when a player in an organization disagree on an injury?
It's probably one of the worst things to disagree on.
Tanner Pearson just traded to Montreal. Kawhi Leonard traded to Toronto.
Like, money is one thing. Like, we could, okay, I'm worth this, you're worth this. Like
Jack Eichel.
Money is money. But injury, it's like, are you believing me? Or you can't feel what I'm feeling. Is that real? Are you just using an excuse? Medical doctors can find what they can find. If they don't find anything, what... it's a real sticky situation to be in.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing I don't know. I don't know if that's the biggest thing to worry about. But if an athlete is looking for something to explain deficiencies...
And not finding them,
maybe you're doing some, not like baseless injections, but it's not like he's undergoing surgery. You know what right. I mean? Like, I don't know what the purpose of these injections are other than what you said.
Inflammation
to alleviate discomfort
or something, inflammation.
Yeah. Well, guess what? MRIs and all that stuff, everything they did with Alec Manoah about a month ago when this was all going down, well, they didn't find anything wrong.
He's met with several
Sometimes
specialists.
Sometimes you can just be sore. I'm sore this morning. But Alec Manoah is a young professional athlete who's supposed to be in the height of his career.
So they've met with several specialists. No elbow or shoulder issues. No structural damage in his throwing arm. So there's other things. There's weird little tendons and there's stuff in the arm.
There is, but that stuff is studied at a very, very high level. people know. Athletic therapists know. Doctors understand these tendons and ligaments and muscles and bones and everything. Cartilage, even. We got some cartilage information on lock. We know it all. And for them to not find anything is a mystery.
It is a mystery.
It's BNS. That's a valuable line of communication for sure to whomever that is.
We should have.
Because we're going to learn something this summer or this winter.
You know what we should have done? Revisionist history, and I'm mad at myself. One final tarot card reading on Alec Manoah and the Blue Jays. I don't even know if I'd want to know that.
What was our Manoah conclude? What did the spirits tell us about Manoah?
I don't think we did
that
it.
One fateful.
Did we?
We did a Manoah. I believe we did a Manoah when things were.
No, I
dicey.
Think we did a Dubas was the most specific human one.
Dubas was,
and that one scared the crap out of us because he had eight swords in his back, and then
guess what?
It ended up happening.
Brandon Shanahan. Applied one.
A couple.
Yeah, applied one.
Anyway.
Maybe not eight, but at least one.
We'll touch on it one more time with Blair, and then we probably, hopefully, won't touch on it ever again until there's a conclusion. Okay, Leafs on the ice yesterday, officially opening their training camp at Ford Performance, and I remembered how much training camp sucked because I saw the skate test. Oh, my God. That gave me... This heebie-jeebies.
What was the worst? What did it entail? So the worst you've ever dealt with?
Well, not as bad as what the Leafs did yesterday. So Keefe goes, he does this every year, but it's basically end-to-end stops and starts for 20 minutes. Just end-to-end. And the guys are hanging over the boards, going to throw up. And when asked about it, Keith goes, quote, "It's not easy. It's built to be miserable, and it is. We like to lead with the hard things. Mm-hmm. Playing and winning in the NHL is not an easy thing to do, and we know that very well. But each year we've done it, I've been impressed with how the guys get through it. When we regroup and get have meeting, get to practice, I'm impressed with the pace that follows after a grueling experience. It's and he goes, he mentions that it's like a mental test. It really is, because your legs, you don't feel your legs. We had something similar. Ours was different for the two universities I played at. Dartmouth was off the ice, a shuttle test, and it was 150-yard shuttle, so 50, 50, 50, like back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to do it in less than 30 seconds.
Okay, so it's a 30-second sprint.
But back to back to back, right? It's not right. One straight line sprint, so it's harder. And mm-hmm. then you had a minute and a half, and then you did it again. And then you had a minute and a half, you did it again. You did it five times. Then you had a five-minute break. Then you did the entire thing five times, and then you had a five-minute break. And then you did the entire thing five times, you had a five-minute break. It was the hardest thing I've literally ever done. And your goal was to pass it and to get it in under 30 seconds each time. And in my 4 years of playing NCAA Division I hockey, two people passed the test. Wow. Our goaltender, who literally runs Ironman stuff, and Laura Stacey, who's an Olympian.
Wow.
I never once passed it. If I passed the first five levels.
That's the standard.
Yeah. And then obviously the beep test is one that you would do, and you know that well. But the on-ice test was kind of the same kind of like shuttles. And the reason why it's so hard is because you get this lactic acid in your legs within maybe
2 minutes.
2 minutes. Yeah. And then you are grinding, and it is really a mental test. It's like, can you just push yourself past the point of pain where you can't even feel your legs moving and you are out of breath and you're hustling and you're looking at your teammates too. Like it's kind of not competitive, but you're like, let's go. Come on. Like you're not just focused on yourself. You want everyone to perform well. It is a grueling effort. And when you end, it doesn't end. Like you just feel this pit in your stomach for like 25 minutes because your body's like sucked of life.
So you don't get the runner's high?
That thing
you just
runner's
find
high is when I'm running down by the lakefront and I've got my headphones in and listening to the new Olivia Rodrigo album and it's pretty and it's sunny and I'm like, okay. Oh my God,
okay.
Runner's
right.
high. There's a dog. This is literally like torture.
Yeah.
And the guys did it yesterday. So that's what I remember of training camp. Day one sucks.
And that they have to practice after seems grueling, but also it's probably kind of fun because like it's just like, oh, yeah.
But that's the mental
you're
test.
Done with it. Yeah, you're done with it. And I think you'd have the runner's high in the practice afterwards.
Right. It's kind of like, oof, thank God we're done with that.
Yeah, you're done with it.
But if you failed it, you'd have to do it again for us.
Now, can you fail a 20-minute just straight skate? Because
his is different.
You just get there was heroes, no goal. Like guys that are just like, you know, lapping.
We had this packed
We
once.
Should have looked into that. Who was dominating?
Yeah, I didn't watch the stream.
Who would be that guy on the Leafs?
I don't know. Someone like with a good level of cardio consistency, but you also have to not going to lie. You kind of pace yourself. You don't go balls to the wall in your first sprint. You like kind of realize that this is a effort. And I remember at first when we did some of our skate tests, we'd like look at each other and be like, okay, like let's set this pace. And you are making sure that you're in a similar pace. But then our coach caught on to it and made us wear heart rate monitors. So your heart rate had to be above like 175 the entire time.
How would it not be?
Well, because he realized that
But you know if you're dogging it.
Well, we were going like 80%, but 80% wasn't good enough. So we had to go legitimately as hard as we could with this heart rate monitor on it. He had an iPad that tracked the heart rate monitor and be like, 4-4 is not pushing her heart rate.
Oh, you had live data.
Live data.
Look at you at
and
Dartmouth.
He'd be like, panic.
$1 billion endowment
that's,
right there.
That's why. At least $1 billion.
That he happened at TMU?
No, definitely not. Anywho, so day one of camp sucks for that.
Sucks for the goalies, dude. They have to do it 20
they
minutes
They had
of that?
To do it for us,
oh,
yeah.
God.
But you're mostly like laughing because they're just like flailing out there.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of our goalies was like the fittest players I ever played with. So she honestly like probably schooled us. We saw that and we saw our first look at Maple Leafs lines. Ooh, kind of what we had expected a little bit. But Nylander is playing center, folks, and he wants to play here in Toronto.
That's yeah, he your, does. He
those
does.
Are your headlines from day one of Leafs camp.
I don't know if you heard, but he wants to be in Toronto.
Do you want to play Nylander's clip on his contract situation?
Yeah, let's hear him say that at least once.
Let's hear his voice, because we didn't hear him on day one. We heard him on day two.
Yeah, you know what? I want to be here, and this is where I want to play, but I'm going to let my agent and Brad take care of that, and I'm not going to answer any more questions about my contract.
How are you able to just be so, like, unbothered by this whole thing? We're all talking about it on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, I still have one more year left, so that's just how I'm thinking about it, so.
Did I not give you basically verbatim what William Nylander was going to say yesterday?
I believe he did.
I'm in the brain of William Nylander. Cool cat. But that's it, folks. He likes Toronto. He's going to let his agent deal with it and shut up about it in a nice way. So it's fine. I respect it. Let's just move on.
Yeah, it didn't come with the same like authority as Austin Matthews.
We were there last year.
With authority. I know.
He's a surfer bro. That's like, man, like, it's just a contract. Man, it's life. Whatever.
He's got one more year.
I got my slides on and my Bucky.
Yeah,
bucket hat.
I guess that's the attitude that allows you to be like, hey, I'll change positions in a contract year. It is interesting. We talked about it a lot yesterday, that William Nylander experiment, what it means for Tavares, mm-hmm. what it means for line mates, what it means to the whole thing, having a superstar on the ice 85% of the time, whatever it's going to be. It's interesting. Well, I guess one thing we learned is like sort of the rationale or some of the rationale is that like Yarncroke and Domi can play center.
Right.
And if needed in a pinch,
well,
covering whatever. It does, but like... He's got to either be able to play it or he can't play it.
So I saw it in both ways as well. Like, I don't think you want to put him on a center line with two guys that don't know anything about playing center. Like, there's a defensive responsibility that you learn when you play center.
So it's not an interchangeable position, as you know.
Totally understand. But I played center most of my career, and I'd always be like sometimes jealous of the wingers that just stood up at the blue line and didn't understand the defensive zone responsibilities. If you've played center, you know... Sometimes there's switches. Sometimes there's times you need to get lower and assist. Domi and Yarncroke have played center. Not only do they understand the defensive responsibilities and can, like, help. You shouldn't be having to help. Yes, I get your point there. But in the faceoff dot, both of them can get in there and assist if needed. I don't think you need to give William Nylander a cushion of making sure he plays with two centers. I don't think it hurts, though. I think it allows for a little bit of, like... walking into the water instead of jumping in head first. So I think it's a smart move. And I know that Keith mentioned that he specifically picked those two as wingers. I think it's a smart idea. If you're going to make this thing work, make sure he doesn't feel like alienated, drop down in center if he hasn't played there for a few years. But I mean, those two wingers really make sense to me.
Okay. So since you play the position, your whole life, there's different kind of centers, right? There are ones that are like, the bedrock of your team, Patrice Bergeron, like they lead mm-hmm. everything defensively first. Nylander would be on the opposite side
yes.
of that, where this is an offensively focused player.
He needs to pick up his
He's
defensive
not playing
play,
center
yes.
because defense is his thing. So let's say, the shift starts on the fly and Nylander is in the offensive zone aggressively like you'd want him to be because William Nylander's
like
that player. He's
dots,
getting below.
Yeah.
He's doing whatever he wants. Is part of that just so, hey, he doesn't have to be the first man back at all times. Mm-hmm. And they can just, if Domi is that person who is first back, he just plays the center position defensively
so.
Until William Nylander gets there. Is that something that would even work at a high level? Or is that... is William Nylander going to have to change his game?
I think that Domi is the type of guy that's like, he's aggressive and he thrives from being in the play. Like, he might be a guy that's low, but I feel confident that Domi has a back check ability that's probably a little better than Nylander. Like, Nylander hasn't been put in the situation where he's first man back, first man in. Like, back checking is probably one of the weakest sets of skills of William Nylander.
And I think he can be a good checker, but it's mm-hmm. in like opportunistic moments rather than, hey, like diligently getting back mm-hmm. to break. But he's never been in that position to
right.
be fair.
So it's hard for us to judge because he gets criticized for like loop-de-doopy play, right?
Yes.
Like he's got the big turns, he gets control of the puck and he goes. But when he doesn't have control of the puck, sometimes you're like, what's William Nylander doing out there? He's floating. You can't do that when you play center. Like, you need to be everywhere.
That's the sort of thing you were jealous of.
Yeah.
If you're a right winger who's on there to score, you can get away with big turns. Mm-hmm. You can't get away with big turns playing the center ice position on somewhat of a checking line.
No, you definitely cannot. I know I've tried to find the quote, and maybe he said this or I read it, but something about like, well, when I play wing, I like playing wing because I get more breakaways. Yeah. Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
But that's not your responsibility right now.
It's easier to play wing.
Is to be able to create your own opportunities and not have someone create them for you. So that's like, it's not going to be easy transition. He's played it before though. So it's not like we're just sticking him in there ice cold, but I think Domi and Yarncroke both have like that checker grit a little bit. I don't know Yarncroke as much, but Domi for sure. And he's going to want to prove it. Like we saw so many clips yesterday from camp. Domi was playing with a little fire. Like,
oh,
this
yeah.
guy is in the corners. He's going to endear himself to this fan base. as we saw yesterday already, with some of the video coming out of camp, but I'm excited.
I really like the line. I really want to see this get,
and this is my one plea to Sheldon Keefe. Give them three exhibition games. Three. Give me three. Three sample sizes of Nylander, Domi, and Yarncroke. Don't, like, what's the point of camp?
I want three regular season games.
Okay, well, let's get there first. What's the point of camp if you, I didn't like it, and then you pull out from that situation? Like, you need to see how this works. That's why you have preseason games. That's why you have training camp. But Sheldon Keefe is very quick to switch things up or just throw things in the blender. I want to see this stick for three exhibition games. Thank you.
Yeah, that line is not my concern. The concern with this lineup as it's constructed or William Nylander playing center is what happens to the second line? And they have a lot to prove as well, and they have a lot of gelling to do because that is completely new as it stands. Was it Lafferty, Tavares, and Nyes yesterday? If so, I mean, that is a completely new combination. They probably overlapped for 0 minutes last year. Tavares is going to have to anchor a successful line with less useful parts than he's had previously. It's been Marner or Nylander. Sometimes it's been a little bit of Matthews as well. Like, he's had guys. Mm-hmm. He's got a little less. And Nyes is a key player for this team. Yeah. And Tavares is going to have to be key as well.
But I think that's also an opportunity that I think is welcomed for William Nylander because he's always kind of been that misfit. Like, you're not Matthews and Marner, but you're still good, right? Like, who are you? I think this gives him a great opportunity to say, well, I'm actually versatile. I'm my own version of, air quotes, superstar that can do something different. Mm-hmm.
And this is the year, more valuable.
This is the year to prove it.
Than even the guys cha-ching. You won't let me compare myself
to. That's
it.
So, cha-ching. Anywho, so lots to come from Leafs training camp. Excited to see them play our semblance of a real hockey game on Monday with lines and competitive people and referees. So.
Yeah, we got some work to do, by the way.
Yeah, I feel good about it.
We have to learn about some Noah Gregors and Al.
Apparently, this Noah Gregor guy is going to make a team.
Yeah, that one, like the one. If you sign one PTO, generally, it's like, hey, we'll get it done when we have to get it done.
Okay. Is that like the handshake agreement?
I don't know. I mean, that just seems like that's how it happens with the Leafs. But then the Avalanche signed like Brandon Cozen, who played for the Leafs, what, 10 years ago?
When I saw that name,
maybe
thought,
not
10. How do I know? Did I go to high school with this guy? Like, I thought it was someone that was
Peter Hall inside a PTO.
Then. I thought it was somebody
PTOs
from like
everywhere.
A blast from the past that I, you know, played York Simcoe Express when I was 10 years old with. And then I remember this guy actually playing for the Maple Leafs. So
yeah. Then went to Russia and just dominated, no? Or was he dominating Russia before? Either way.
I don't know what his career trajectory is, but he's back.
He's back.
It's comeback season.
The Brandon Cozen era continues.
All right, let's take a break. We'll do the A-list, the final A-list. We'll take your text. We'll read your text. Do you have anything you want to say? Because this is all about you. And I also have a question for the male listeners specifically.
Ooh.
After the break.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now, it's time for
hey, yo.
The A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Aw, the last one. Best for last. Okay, question. We're going to play a clip here, and it's been going, this line of questioning has been going viral all over the internet, all over every social media account.
Which means I haven't seen it yet.
That's true. Every social media account run by any professional sports franchise has done this same thing where they've sat their players down and asked them the following question. How often do you think about the Roman Empire? So Sportsnet asked the buds yesterday at training camp.
I did see this.
And here's their range of answers. But before that, I need you to think about your answer if you're listening too. Like, is this, am I missing something from the female side of the perspective about the Roman Empire? Anyway, here's the Leafs answering how often they listen or think about, the Roman Empire.
How often do you think about the Roman Empire?
I think about the Roman Empire.
Matthews.
Once a week.
Once a
only
week.
When I watch Gladiator.
Every day almost.
Every day.
Every time I watch the movie Gladiator.
How often do you think about the Roman Empire?
Probably once every 3 months.
Not ever.
Every day.
I've
seen this thing the last like 3 days. And
I got asked this thing.
But every day. I think it was like the answer should be right or something.
I said like once a month.
How often do you think about the Roman Empire?
Never.
Good.
Why would I have heard that one over the past couple of days?
It's viral right now.
Is it really?
Yeah. Everyone's talking about it.
I gotta get on my social media again, man.
What specifically are you thinking about?
Just, I think the size of it.
The Colosseum.
What about the aqueducts?
The aqua what?
The aqueducts.
I have never thought about those.
Okay, so truly there are people saying, and like not facetiously, that they listen, they think of the Roman Empire every single
this
day.
This was one viral video, right? That's someone...
Yeah, but now everyone's doing it and asking
this
question.
Now everyone's doing it.
How often do you think about the Roman Empire?
I mean, I'm thinking about the Roman Empire because I've had to think about it because I've heard it multiple times this week.
Okay, but erase that from your mind.
But
previously to this.
Pre-knowing about this TikTok, like zero time. Like, I don't even know. I'm not a history buff, so I don't. But even if you were, like...
What are you thinking about?
Let's say you're a sports historian. How often do you think about sports history?
Never.
Like, even if you know all that,
like,
right?
Are you just sitting there thinking, like, you wake
even
up
if you wrote a book, do you still think about it all the time?
Like, oh, man, that summit series.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Like, no, that doesn't happen. I guess, like, how often do you think about the Golden Goal?
Oh, you might think about it
a couple times. You see something
CC
that reminds
might think
you
about
of
a
it?
Lot.
Oh, I'm sure he does.
Anyway, it's such a weird, random, viral thing right now, but I need to open the question, is how often do you think about the Roman Empire?
It's spreading misinformation, though. Like, it's like not every guy just, like, loves history.
That's the question. Be honest in the text line, because I don't get it.
How often do you think about it?
Legitimately never. I couldn't tell you one thing about it other than it was a long time ago.
Anyway, I don't even know when it was.
It was... Watch a movie.
It predates me.
It sure does. Okay. So
barely.
We'll take your text at 590-590, but it wouldn't be the final A-list without taking an opportunity to thank our loyal soldiers behind the glass, Josh and Daniele, who, for me, I've been able to work with Daniele for my entire career here at Sportsnet,
mm-hmm.
and he is the hardest
Sames.
Working person for two years for me, from three iterations of this show. So JD Blake and I, JD and I, Justin and I, and Daniele is the hardest working person at the station. And I know sometimes it feels like you don't get that respect and appreciation because you're not here in front of the mic and in front of the cameras, but we really love everything you do for us. We have this incredible rundown every day. People don't see it, but it is 10 to 20 pages of info stats, and he stays up to the wee hours of the night, sometimes even sleeps here. The guy works so, so hard. So thank you, Daniele, producer Daniele, for everything. And Josh, running the board, pressing the yum, 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 keeping us on time, keeping us going to commercials, making our sponsors happy, always full of joy.
Always grinding through car trouble, but
yes,
making it happen every single time.
Consistently here, early, working hard, cutting audio, making sure we have the clips ready. And when I throw to them and I don't give him any heads up and he finds a way to play them, he keeps our songs. The text line loves his song choices. So thank you to both of you for everything on our show. Josh is staying on the morning show. Danielle's moving to a different position with us here at 590. So we'll see both of them around, but not necessarily with our show moving forward. So do you want to come on and say anything, guys? You are our A-listers of the day, and we appreciate you very much.
And you're now on the spot. Yeah, we appreciate it, boys. Jump on here. Of course, I jumped on here late. Daniele welcomed me in, of mm-hmm. course. And yeah, he gives us the opportunity, a fail-safe every single day with all this information. And he puts us in a position to succeed every time with the amount of good guests we get on a difficult spot.
Oh.
Like, it's hard to convince people to wake up at 7 a.m. to do a show, but he
and
does
every day
it every
find
single
someone.
Day.
Well, gentlemen.
Oh, thank you guys. I just want to, echo what you guys said about Daniele.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sticking around. I'm not going anywhere.
Poor
I'm
guy.
Staying in the morning. I get to wake up nice and early on Monday. It's going to be great. But no, obviously, like, the hard work that Daniele puts into this mm-hmm. show, like, it makes my life easier. Mm-hmm. And I know it makes your guys' life easier as well. So I just want to echo that. And thank you guys. Like, it's been awesome working with you guys.
Thanks,
and
Josh.
Have fun sleeping in.
We might have a little fun sleeping in. Thanks, Josh.
If I can jump in briefly.
Please do.
I do need to thank Josh for his companionship back here, because we do share some good laughs, and it makes this working at this hour a lot more enjoyable. And obviously a thank you to you two, because I think it's you guys also help make it easy or easier and more enjoyable, and having the freedom to help you guys along through the process. So you guys have done a terrific job.
Thank you.
I think you will continue to do a very good job. And it's a tremendous opportunity that you have in front of you. So this has been a very great experience. It is bittersweet for me too, because mm-hmm. I'm not doing a daily grind from here on out, right? I'm not doing this
job.
So it's gonna be different for me. But yes, thank you very much.
And we're all gonna be teammates moving forward, but mm-hmm. just different times and pathways throughout the building. But we will see you.
And Daniele's fingerprints are going to be on everything.
Yeah, he's going to be a busy guy.
Great. And of course, you recognize that voice because Daniele is on mm-hmm. this station a lot as well, and he's going to mm-hmm. continue to do that, which is a great thing. So, yeah, just positive vibes all around.
So sweet. Our final A-list, and shout out to our two A-listers behind the glass. And Justin, I'll thank you later.
Okay.
There's no need to do it now.
I mean, nothing really changes between
us. Whatever. It's just you. Charles Davis is going to join us after the break. So we'll go from one sentimental A-list to one final chat with Charles Davis, who's joining us from Seattle bright and early.
Ridiculous.
That's next.